It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, slowly we have been emerging from a colder than usual spring. Our parks have greened up, and it looks like our temperatures are warming up. Cross your fingers. Good time to have a conversation about the parks in our state, how we use them, how they're funded, how we'd like to see them change for the better in the coming years and decades. That's why we want to reach out to you, especially if you're a park user here in Iowa. We'd like to have you describe an experience you've had in one of our parks, or perhaps one you go back for again and again to experience in one of our parks in the state that stands out in your mind. How do you find your little bit of bliss in our parks, I guess, might be one way of putting it. 1-866-780-9100. rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. So hopefully we'll have during the hour a number of you listeners helping us create a mosaic, if you want to look at it that way, of different ways in which our parks are used and cherished. 1-866-780-9100. Our guest for the entire hour in our Des Moines studio, Jerry Schneff, is with us, Executive Director of Keep Iowa Beautiful. Hi, Jerry.
Greetings. How are you doing, Ben?
I am doing great over here. Joe Gunderson is there with Jerry, Secretary of the Board at the Iowa Parks Foundation. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Ben. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, too. I just stepped outside. It was a tremendous wind out there due to the storms up north, I guess. But these are all parts of our natural areas, and we experience sunshine, storms, all kinds of things in parks. We want to talk to you, too, about the past, present, and the future of our parks, Jerry and Joe, and get some callers in our conversation. Jerry, let me start off with you before we get into the present and future of Iowa's parks. Tell us a little bit about their past. How many state parks do we have? What is the basis of their founding?
Well, let me tell you, Ben, one of the keys before we start this is that most of the scenic and natural areas in Iowa are generally set aside as either state, county, or city parks. So they're in a preservation kind of a status. So they're like the jewels. They're kind of like emeralds. They're like an emerald necklace spread around the state.
Mm-hmm.
And if you looked only at state parks, there's probably 86 designated state parks. But out of those, you would probably have a large number that are not truly what you and I remember as state parks. There are probably 30 to 40 of that category. But what happens with all of them, and they started back in 1920 with the first park, State Park, with Backbone State Park. And I might suggest to you that those started by private initiatives. Private efforts. They didn't start because the government wanted to do it. They started because Iowa citizens wanted those kind of areas protected, available to them for recreational use and enjoyment. And there's two kinds of levels on how to view state parks, Ben. The first one is the actual use of them. So you use it for hiking and canoeing and biking and all kinds of things. The other one is as an individual that wants to know that they're available to future generations and may never use them. To me, that's probably an extremely strong part of our state infrastructure. And I think it's critical because it represents a sign that Iowa is healthy and it's an attractive state to visit. So with that kind of background, we've had a long leadership history. People like Ira Gabrielson, Aldo Leopold, Thomas McBride, Major John Lacey, J.N. Ding Darling, dozens of other Iowans provided early leadership and affection. But what didn't happen is everybody had their affinity for their state park or their city park or their county park. There was not an collective feeling about support for all the parks in general.
What differences does that make?
Well, it makes a great deal in whether you're going to, if you're only after your state park, you aren't probably putting your focus on to the statewide needs and funding for the whole system. So it's hard for legislators to keep sorting out just one state park and keep pitching their particular park. They need to raise and elevate all of the state parks. back in the 80s and 90s when I was sitting in on legislative sessions and listening to governor's budget hearings, I sat through those hearings and no one showed up when it came to the parks budget. Mm. And I thought, this is terrible. What's going on here? If you had any other topic, if it was highways or human services or anything, there were always groups there, but not when it came to the state parks. So that was kind of an alert for me, and it was an alert for Keep Iowa Beautiful to spend some time in making sure that these emeralds, these jewels of Iowa, are managed and protected to the future.
Mm-hmm. We want to get to our callers in just a minute, Jerry and Joe, but before that, Jerry, there has been a period of some types of neglect for our parks in Iowa. Briefly tell us what's been going on there.
Generally, what it has been is it's a decline in the amount of funding available to them for both management and for the guidance and visitor services that are essential in an area, as well as facilities that are needed to upgrade to safety standards and health standards. So these parks have diminished and continue to diminish unless we turn around and put additional investment into these areas and listen to the responsiveness or the needs of Iowans. So, and if we go back and do one simple thing, 1920 to 2020, here we are 100 years, we need to be ready to celebrate some major achievements. And I think that's where Joe comes in and working with. We did some early work through Keep Iowa Beautiful and bringing together Iowans. And one of the keys in that was Don Avenson and helping to visit with Governor Branstead and to Neil Smith and asking them to co-chair some efforts.
Okay, we want to hear about that plan in just a minute from Joe, Vision Parks to People, that project that a lot of people are getting on board on. But let's listen, gentlemen, about how people are using our parks here briefly. We've got a lot of callers want to tell us about their enthusiasm, their passion for our parks. First up, Nate is with us. Hi, Nate. What part of the state are you calling from?
Hi there. I'm from North Liberty, Iowa.
Okay. What park do you like to go to? I bet you Lake McBride?
You got it.
What do you like to do there, Nate?
I love to run around the lake.
Okay.
It's right in our backyard, and it's beautiful.
Uh-huh. What do you get out of that? I mean, you could run around a track. You could run through down a country road. What's so special about running through the park?
It's a really special place. I mean, a lot of times we run on the road, but it's a chance for us to get away from the city, and it's not very far away. And you get a lot of beautiful things. You see wildlife. There's breathtaking views from the spillway. Just a lot of things that kind of take you away from the hustle and bustle of life. And just a really enjoyable experience running on the trails there.
And you have a group that you run with every week?
Yes, every Thursday morning we get up really early with our headlamps. And it's a chance for us to share that experience and see a different side of it, too. We get to see the sun come up. Just an excellent way to start the day.
How big is your group, Nate?
We've been as big as 7 or 8. A lot of times, I started out with just 2 of us, but... it's grown, and a lot of people seem to be interested to get out there and check it out. They're curious, and most of the time, every time, everybody's just they're in awe that was there and they didn't know about it.
Right, these things can be on our doorstep practically, and if we don't go out to the parks, we don't know all the majesty that we can find there. Nate, keep on running with your group. Thank you for sharing with us.
All right, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, sorry, cut you off a little early. Let's go to Scott Mills in Des Moines. Scott, you're calling from Des Moines. Where do you like to go in that area?
My favorite park in the metro area is Browns Woods on the southwest corner of the metro.
Mm-hmm. What do you do there?
I also, like Nate, I also run, but I started there as a geocacher.
Okay, you're going to have to remind us. So what is geocaching?
Geocaching is just a high-tech treasure hunt utilizing a GPS device, or with today's, with everyone having smartphones, you can get an application off a free server and use your phone's GPS to do the sport too.
Mm-hmm. What sort of landscapes lend themselves to geocaching?
Everything. If it's there, someone will hide something on it. You probably can't go anywhere in Iowa without being within a mile of at least one geocache.
So this is a way to exercise your legs and your brain at the same time?
Yep, and if you want to do it on a bicycle or a kayak, you can do that too. You're only limited by your own imagination.
Okay, thank you, Scott Mills, for calling from the Des Moines area Let's go to Gary in Albia. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
Hi, what part of the state are you calling from? Albia.
Albia. Yeah, Albia, the Tumwa area.
Mm-hmm.
And I am calling also to follow up on Scott Mills. We're also geocachers.
Geocachers. Okay, so do you have a group you do this with?
Well, actually, my wife sits on the board of directors of the Iowa Geocachers organization, and statewide, I would estimate around 800 to 1,000 geocachers that like to use parks for geocaching.
Okay, a new trend there. Thank you, Gary from Albia. A tweet from Aaron. Aaron loves Ledges State Park. As one especially beautiful ledge, she writes, overlooking the water. She got married there 8 years ago. Let's go to another fan of Ledges State Park. Is it Phronik Hasuk?
Yes.
Phronik?
Yes.
Hi, welcome to our program. You're a fan of Ledges as well.
Yes, I'm an assistant professor at Iowa State, and I take my sedimentary geology students down there to study both the ledges themselves, as well as to go down by the river and study some of the modern sedimentary processes that are happening today.
Mm-hmm. So you can just take in the beauty of a state park, but if you're a geologist and you take your class there, you can appreciate it on a whole different level. What is special in terms of geology at Ledges?
Well, what's really exciting about Ledges is that, being in the center part of Iowa, we don't have a lot of rock outcroppings. And so when we take students there, they can, both be made to be felt really small by looking at these giant outcrops of sandstone. But then when they get up close, they can also see that all those giant outcrops are made up of these tiny little grains of sand. And then we can get beyond that to the story of why we have these sandstones here, and we can start talking about these big distributary channels that brought these sediments off of eroding landscapes to the north of here and brought them and dumped them into a shallow ocean that used to be in central Iowa about 300 million years ago.
Mm-hmm. What's the effect of getting students out of the classroom to see something like that, and perhaps they'd been there before and never realized the things you're describing?
Yeah, pretty much all my students have been to Ledges before, but they've never been there sort of on a mission. And so when we get them out there, first of all, they just love being, outside and in nature. A lot of folks get into geology because they really like the outdoors. And so we try to exploit that by getting our students out of Ames, off campus as often as we can. And Ledges is really our closest rock outcrops that we can get folks to, and they really enjoy it.
Okay, Phronik, thank you for sharing that with us. A fan mm-hmm. of Ledges State Park, a geologist. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
John is with us in Iowa City. Hi, John.
Yes. Hey, Ben.
How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Okay. What aspect of our parks do you cherish most?
Well, contrary to what a lot of your folks might think, it's the winter that I like. When I first came down, I grew up in Canada. When I first came down to Iowa, I despaired a little bit on finding the wild spaces that we'd had up there, and especially in the winter. And then I realized I could ski out at the University of Iowa's McBride Nature Recreation Area. And lo and behold, I was skiing and training just like I had up in Ontario. And it was a real discovery for me.
So these parks, these trails are created and then groomed for cross-country skiers?
Yep, for cross-country skiers. They're hiking trails during the summer. Which is it's a wonderful thing. I think the university has classes out there for kids during the non-snow season. And in the wintertime, they groom them for skating and for classic skiing.
Uh-huh. Give me a picture, a sense of a perfect cross-country skiing day out there at McBride.
Well, it's got to be really cold.
Well, being from Canada, you can tolerate that.
Yeah, it's got to be cold, and, you got oftentimes the blue skies and the sunshine, and there's no traffic noise, just the sound of the wind in the trees and the sound of your skis. It's just really peaceful.
Okay.
Terrific.
John in Iowa City, thank you for sharing your bliss in Iowa parks with us. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio also on Facebook, or you can tweet us. We're looking today for, it's kind of a love an expression of love to our state parks. Tell us where you go and what you like to do at our state park. We're trying to create a little mosaic of all the ways in which they are. Jerry and Joe Gunderson are with us if you just joined us. Jerry is executive director of Keep Iowa Beautiful. Jerry Neff. And Joe Gunderson, Secretary of the Board at the Iowa Parks Foundation. So, Joe, let's turn to you because we've heard and we still have a lot of people on the phone lines we can go back to in a few minutes, time permitting. Let's talk about the plan for the future. Governor Branstad's Green Ribbon Commission, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and the Iowa Park Foundation have been working together on a strategic plan for Iowa's parks called Vision Parks to People. You have just finished the planning process. What's been happening?
Well, about a year ago, the governor put together the Green Ribbon Commission, and it's a bipartisan commission. It represents park constituencies from across the state. All the things that Nate, Scott, Gary, Aaron, Fronik, and John brought up are things that were discussed and many other things. The basic idea is that Iowa has had a fragmented park system in the past. The county conservation system is twice the size of the state park system, but it is also scattered throughout the state. The city park system is the same way. And there is, while there is a little coordination, there's not much. And the idea behind the Green Ribbon Commission's report is that we need to take a look at regional park planning, and we need to model what Iowa did with the State Fair Blue Ribbon Commission and revamping the State Fair and the Vision Iowa Plan. Essentially, the Governor's Commission has recommended that 2 and 3 county regions, self-identified, would, with the help of the Iowa Park Foundation, the DNR, the County Conservation System, come up with a regional park plan. The state would put up matching dollars for local government and private individual and corporate dollars to implement that plan over a 5 to 10 year period. And all the constituencies that you've heard from, in addition to all the hunters, all the fishermen, all the canoers, all the bird watchers, and those people who just drive through our park system, which is a big group, all have input into how their regional park system looks, and that we and that locally folks carefully plan where they want the different opportunities. That can be camping, that can be wilderness experience, that can be canoeing. All those things would be planned within that region, and then we would fund it kind of methodically according to a plan along the Vision Iowa concept. The legislature, particularly the legislative leaders, Craig Paulson, Linda Uppmeyer, Mike Gronstahl, together with Senator Matt McCoy, in working with the governor, put together a $2 million pilot project for this next year where one or two communities, one or two regions will be identified to implement and develop these plans that will then be used as models for around the state. It is that kind of Iowa practical approach from the bottom up, and everybody puts in a partnership dollars and partnership political support that we think will sustain our park system over the next 100 years. That's the plan.
Explain a little bit, Joe, how viewing them collectively in a region or as an entire state benefits us. Why doesn't it work as well, or why don't you think it works as well to view them individually as they have been in for decades?
Well, one of the things is Iowa is becoming one of the leaders in trail systems. And one of the concepts in this plan is that we connect park to park, county to state, and county to park to city and to communities. And that trail system is a collective effort. That's one way. Water systems. Many of our parks are along rivers and river valleys, and we have not coordinated the use of those resources over the years. We may have a county system that duplicates the resources that are in a state park system or in a city park system, and we are using resources in ways that don't maximize what we have. The other point is that politically, the reason our parks have historically not received the funding the funding that we would hope they would have is because we've had a fragmented system. It is putting all those resources together and those people together that provides the political will to properly fund our outdoor recreation. And by the way, it's not just parks. It's also wildlife areas, state forests, public hunting areas, public fishing areas. It is all those things together. It is all those constituencies that would come together and form these regional park plans.
Let's have Mark join us from Boone. Mark, welcome to our program. What do you want to chip in as we talk about our wild areas, our parks, and so forth?
Well, I'd like to chip in that all those city, county, federal lands together equal a square about 27 miles on a side. And, for example, our state parks now have about 500 miles of trails, and that all our state parks are about a square 9 miles on a side. And so the city of Des Moines is roughly 9 miles on a side, for example. And we're looking at we have over half the amount of trails in that area already as all the streets in the city of Des Moines. So as the retired trails coordinator for the Department of Natural Resources, I'm very concerned about this concept of development and trails, especially within the areas that are left, because those are the last pieces left in Iowa with any biological integrity. And this very much concerns me. And I've worked, went to the public meetings, I've worked on some of the committees setting this up. And all I heard a lot of was a lot more about development. And this terrifies me.
Mm-hmm. What sort of development terrifies you most?
Well, even the trails, I look at from my history of 30 years of working on the trails and state parks and everything, we have some trails that are 5 and 6 feet deep. We have considerably many, many miles that need restoration, need attention. And so those are some of the last things that get the attention is that actual natural infrastructure within those parks.
Okay, Mark, we're coming up on a break, so I'm going to give time for Joe Gunderson to respond to your comments. Okay. Mark from Boone, thank you.
Mark, you make a very good point. You probably also are well aware that we have 19 or 20 state parks that are within 3 miles of an existing trail system that are not hooked up. And it is that kind of missed opportunity and expansion of our trail system that the Green Ribbon Commission plan hopes to address so that people have use, broadly speaking, of all our park systems and can camp at one park and have access to other parks through the trail system that you helped develop.
Quickly, before we go to a break, Joe, what would monies go to besides expanded trails and maintenance of trails?
Well, for example, it's going to go to what the people locally ultimately say it should go to, but Iowa has some demographic trends. We increasingly have single-parent households. That means that we're probably going to focus more on cabins and a little less on pup tents and long RV pads. We also have a population over 65 that is greater than the rest of the country. That means looped level trails within our park system.
Okay, Joe Gunderson, we have to take a short break, and then we'll be back more talking about Iowa's parks, wilderness areas, what can be done in the future according to a plan that's created something called Vision Parks to People. We'd like to have your comments about your favorite experiences in parks and perhaps some of your concerns that you've noticed in parks. You want to share that with Jerry Schneff and Joe Gunderson. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Should law school graduates in Iowa have to take the bar exam to practice law in the state? They do now, but the Iowa Bar Association has recommended to the Iowa Supreme Court that our state's law school graduates shouldn't have to. Tomorrow on this program, we'll hear different views on this proposed change as we examine the value of bar exams here in Iowa tomorrow on River to River. Today, we're creating a mosaic in one part of different ways in which our parks are being used and cherished, the concerns we may have over the parks. We're talking with Joe Gunderson, Secretary of the Board at the Iowa Parks Foundation. Also, Jerry Schneff is the Executive Director of Keep Iowa Beautiful, the Secretary of the Board at the Iowa Parks Foundation, Joe Gunderson. With us, Governor Branstad's Green Ribbon Commission, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and the Iowa Park Foundation have been working together on a strategic plan for Iowa's parks called Vision Parks to People. So this hour, we're asking for your input. Tell us the way you love our parks, what you do in our parks that make you love them so much. And we want to get back to more of future planning. But let's go back to the phones and talk to Andy in Cedar Rapids. Andy, hi. Where do you like to get out into the wilderness?
Palisades Kepler State Park.
Beautiful park there, isn't it? What do you like to do there? The trails are wonderful. Have to be
trails
a little
are great. Mm-hmm. I like to just sit by the river and read a lot. So
hear the listen to the gurgling water and read.
Yep, exactly. Just very peaceful and serene.
Okay. Oh. Andy in Cedar Rapids, thanks for that pleasant vision. Is it Evie in Des Moines?
Yes.
Hi, Evie.
Hi.
Where do you go?
Well, we've been going to Springbrook State Park up in Guthrie County since the 80s with our kids and now with our grandkids, and we camp, and now they have a lovely cabin up there that's really a lovely house that we rent and have a family vacation for several years together up there, and we go swimming and hiking and bird watching, and the lake has gotten kind of muddy through the years, and so... And we love to swim, so we've been a little disappointed sometimes in the lake water, but we still trudge right through the mud and like to float in the lake and love it.
All right. Evie in Des Moines, you've given me a couple points here to ask our guests about. One would be what you touched on before, Joe Gunderson. You've identified that in some areas expanded cabin offerings would be worthwhile.
Absolutely. More and more with the age demographic we have and with the single parent population growth, cabins are a principal feature of state and county parks and even some city parks. And there are cabin constructions going on around Iowa now. These regional park plans would contemplate additional cabin construction and the use, for example, of the DNR's cabin registration system so that people can make plans way out ahead of time and have family vacations. And by the way, this follows another trend, and all your callers reflect it. There's actually been a decrease in the attendance at national parks and a corresponding dramatic increase in the attendance at state and county parks because people don't have as much time as they had in blocks. They don't have the full 2 weeks to go on a vacation, and they need to go to someplace close to home. And to have that kind of extraordinary experience close to home that they would otherwise get at a national park. And that is a kind of a call to arms for the city, county, and state park systems to respond and to become the vacation spot and the leisure spot and the reflection spot of choice for Iowans. It's an extraordinary opportunity, and it's right in front of us right now.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about water quality. So many of our parks have wonderful streams, rivers running through them, lakes and so forth. How are we doing there? We have certainly room to improve, don't we? I don't know what you, Joe, or Jerry can say about that.
We're making progress, and there is a substantial lake restoration program that the governor and the legislature have implemented. Lake Darling was the most recent beneficiary of that, and it was a really great result. Lake Manawa down in Pottawatomie County is going through that now. I think that the regional park plans that are contemplated would include watershed protection and enhancement programs that are implemented and encouraged locally. And the impetus initially would be to preserve and enhance the water quality in our recreation areas, which are our lakes, as Evie has mentioned, and in our rivers.
Mm-hmm. What are the chief challenges for water quality? Runoff from our agriculture, pollutants?
Certainly the traditional ones you look to. But I think the biggest challenge for us is education. The stories that we hear around the state where parks are making improvements and lakes are making improvements involve local people talking to local landowners about ways they can, in simple and reasonably inexpensive ways, improve the water drainage system on their own land, and then educating people about how that water ends up in our recreation areas. People, once educated, are very thoughtful. And part of the process of these regional park plans is to give people education so they can go ahead and be as thoughtful as they would otherwise be.
Ben is joining us in Cedar Falls. Hi, Ben. What do you enjoy about
Hi
our
there.
Parks? Or do you have a question or a comment?
A little bit of both. I'm an active park user. I got my Sportsman's Atlas in the car right here next to me. I really enjoy our state preserve system. But just commenting that we're 47th for funding and 49th for percentage of public land in the nation for any other state. And that kind of forces our states and counties to take some creative measures to raise money to improve our parks. Things like row cropping state public land, even harvesting timber from public land. And I'm just making a comment that if our legislature or governor was pretty worried about this, I think they'd try to get the Land and Water Legacy Act pushed through, and we could get some bigger bucks to help encourage these things like clean water and recreation in the state.
Ben, thank you in Cedar Falls for that comment. Joe Gunderson, how will the picture, how will the parks be better funded in the future under this Vision Parks to People plan?
Well, initially, as I mentioned, the legislature and the governor has given $2 million for the pilot project. If that pilot project is successful, and we believe it will be, and it has the benefits with matching funds of 4-to-5-to-1, which is the Vision Iowa model, you can see pretty easily how there'd be a dramatic infusion of funds into Iowa's recreation. And if that first $2 million is spent successfully and gets a multiple of 4-to-5-to-1, then you're going to see the legislature and the governor take a very serious look, and they say as much, at putting in really substantial dollars to public recreation.
Marianne in Algona, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Yes, I enjoy very much Call State Park, which is one of the much smaller state parks in Iowa. We have no streams, no lakes, but we have some trails that many people enjoy, and school children come as well. And I'm just concerned because they're very badly eroding. We can no longer cross-country ski on them because there are drop-off areas. And it really has, we've heard rumors that they would be attended to, but they haven't. And many of us enjoy these things as well as just enjoying the nice lodge that we have and having receptions there and things like that where people do enjoy the park. And I'm just hoping there will be some money for our trails.
Okay, Marianne, concerned about trail maintenance in Algona. We've heard from so many people, Jerry and Joe. Is there still room for input in this Green Ribbon Commission so that people can be directed to a website with their suggestions, as such as we're hearing today?
There certainly is, Ben. This is Jerry. Mm-hmm. What you might do also is encourage people to get in contact with Joe Gunderson, the Iowa Parks Foundation. Keep that one always in mind. The thing I always think back on who will invest in this, the business world has a strong interest in this because it affects whether their employees, not only can they recruit employees, but can they retain employees. So this becomes a quality of life issue. It becomes important that these areas, whether they're state, county, or local, are invested in. And as Joe said, we approach it on a regional basis and try to build that model up. And then you'll find the business community stepping up to it. You'll find individuals in the area stepping up to it. And, you know, there's also some good news here in the concept of a new state park. I would have to tell you that in the appropriation this year, and thanks to the legislature and to the governor and all the people that are interested, there will be a new state park in northwest Iowa, modeled after, and it will be a joint state park with the state of South Dakota, probably the first state park, a joint state park in the nation. And it will be, I'm not sure what the name will be, but right now it's known as the Blood Run National Historic Landmark Site.
And what are the highlights there, the landscape?
Landscape and the fact that this was a Native American site for generations, for decades. It was from the 1450s on up to the 1700s. It was occupied by Native Americans during that period of up to 4,000 to 5,000 plus at any one time, and it was their international trade center. It was their site, and so both Iowa and South Dakota have built on this to protect it. And again, it's one of the recreational elements, one of the needs that we have to look at our history and our culture and to support that kind of investment as well.
You both sound fairly positive about our parks and wilderness areas going forward. You are both? What are your biggest concerns, though? Well, what could stand in the way of this Vision Parks to People?
It is kind of the old-fashioned, are we willing to cooperate? And we've seen it actually develop in Iowa over the years. Our education system, for example, we have voluntarily cooperated to consolidate school districts. We're starting to see shared services for road building and things like that between county and law enforcement. We're positive because we've seen those trends. The concern is that we're able to transfer those trends onto public recreation and to cooperate politically and financially for city, county, and state parks in ways that we have never done. And, oh, by the way, Iowa led the nation in the 1920s with the creation of the state park system. We were at the forefront. In the 1950s, when we created the county conservation system, which is now twice the size of our state park system, we were at the forefront. This is our opportunity in 2014 to show the country that you can cooperate and coordinate an otherwise fragmented park system and make it better for everybody and get full funding to do it.
Okay, Joe, before we leave, tell us a little bit more about this pilot project, the next step here implementing this plan. We'll start this summer. Where is it? What is it?
We're in the process of choosing it. There are areas of the state that are most interested and have a track record of some cooperation with county and state, and they have a track record of partnership and matching funds where local businesses, individuals, local governments have matched funds with state dollars to produce significant public projects. Those areas of the state are of particular interest to us because we feel that this first pilot project has to be a showcase, it has to be a research opportunity, and it has to be a way to develop best practices that we can then spread throughout the rest of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So the exact region hasn't been identified, but we are being contacted, and we are considering through the Iowa Park Foundation and the related constituencies, which area to start with.
Jerry Schneff, if we can just leave with your comments about where you'd like us to be in 2020 when we celebrate the state park system here in Iowa.
I'd like us to have the opportunity to see new improvements, safety and health, plus a real diversion of the arrangement of the kind of opportunities available to all Iowans. So whatever your interest, whether it be, as the people have indicated here, whether it be sitting down and reading, whether it be using the trails, whether it be the active sports and activities, it's that kind of thing I would like to see. And mm-hmm. I'd like to see some of the new areas, new linkages, and new partnerships that we've not had before, as Joe mentioned.
Okay, and people concerned about this, how can people get involved? Where can we direct them?
There is a website for the Iowa Park Foundation, and you're welcome to contact us through that avenue. And my name is Joe Gunderson. I'm the current president of the Iowa Park Foundation.
Joe Gunderson, thank you for joining us. Jerry Schneff, Executive Director of Keep Iowa Beautiful. We hope the vision turns out beautifully in the future. Thank you for your input, gentlemen.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
We didn't get time to get to all of our callers. I'll leave with this email from Nick in Chicago. Fantastic show, he says. Growing up in Dubuque, Eagle Point Park still takes my breath away looking over the Mississippi. Indian Bluffs Wildlife Management Area southwest of Cascade and along the Maquoketa River is very, very primitive with wonderful bluffs and cliffs. Great hiking, rappelling, and climbing. I hope to visit both this upcoming Memorial Day weekend. A lot of interest out there in our parks, and our weather is shaping up to get out there. Though we do know in the winter, as we heard from John in Iowa City, you can have a lot of fun and enjoyment in the parks during the winter as well. Well, finishing up our hour here on River to River, let's talk a little bit about the controversy surrounding the Effigy Mounds National Monument. We've been hearing in our news in northeast part of the state. In recent weeks, we've learned the National Park Service officials approved $3 million in illegal construction projects over a decade, projects that damaged this monument, one of the nation's most sacred American Indian burial sites. Documents released by the National Park Service indicate that 78 structures and boardwalks were constructed without authorization in a 10-year period at Effigy Mounds. Joining us now, Jim Nepstadt. He's a superintendent of Effigy Mounds National Monument. He started in his position in 2011 after the former superintendent of Effigy Mounds, who was the superintendent during the time of this illegal construction, left that position. So just to make it clear, Jim has no personal responsibility or ownership in what happened. Welcome to our program, Jim.
Thanks for having me.
Remind us what the Effigy Mounds are, why we prize them and want to maintain them.
Well, they are a collection of some of the best preserved earthen mounds left behind by prehistoric cultures in the entire country. It's just an absolutely fabulous collection of mounds. Anything from individual, smaller conical shaped mounds to much larger, up to 100 feet in length effigy mounds, mounds that have been purposely shaped into animal shapes and so on. So it's a wonderful resource.
Give us an account of what happened over those 10 years and why it happened.
Well, what happened was there were just some procedural breakdowns. The service, all federal agencies for that matter, are required by law to consult with state historic preservation employees and our tribal partners and so on, and even the general public, you know, in advance of any development work. And in a park like Effigy Mounds, which is largely one big cultural landscape or archaeological site, obviously ground disturbance is something that can't be undertaken lightly. So, you know, that consultation with our state and tribal partners is a really, really important piece of proper procedure. And for whatever reason, that broke down, the conversations didn't take place, and decisions were made relative to development that probably wouldn't have been made had that consultation taken place.
Mm-hmm. Give us some kinds of decisions, some kinds of things that were altered or put in place that were not authorized.
Well, it could be, you know, something as large scale as some of the boardwalks that you may have read about. But a lot of the other projects that may have been on that list may have included infrastructure that is actually pretty necessary for maintaining a park. If you have tens of thousands of visitors descending on the park and you know, coming into the visitor center, using restrooms, getting drinking water, and so on, you need a certain amount of plumbing present, for instance. And some of those projects, you know, involved, you know, something as routine as a water line, you know, the replacement of a routine water line. So, you know, it's not all big, gaudy development. As a matter of fact, most people that come into the park will look around and see that the level of development here is actually pretty pretty light. It's always been that way. So it's mostly those boardwalks and that maintenance structure that
right.
That got
so we get and Jim, I've been to your park there 2 years ago for a magnificent fall weekend, and I just really enjoyed myself. So we don't want to give the impression that in any way this monument, this park, has been ruined in any way.
Absolutely. I mean, that's something that I can't emphasize enough. You know, there was a small amount of damage that occurred in a small number of locations as a result of these projects. But overall, the vast majority of the park's 200-plus mounds are in fantastic shape. The vast majority of the park was untouched by these development projects and remains in fabulous shape. So it remains one of the most wonderful, inspirational places that you can visit in all of Iowa, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, this is one of the nation's most sacred American Indian burial sites. Were any human remains affected by what happened over those 10 years?
No, none of those projects, you know, unearthed any human remains. There was no damage as far as these development projects were concerned, related to human remains.
Jim, in the minute or so that we have left, what do you see in terms of remedying the situation, both in terms of physically there at the park and, I suppose, regaining the trust of the Native American nations that are represented there?
Yeah, I mean, what we're doing the most now is what kind of fell apart during those previous years. We're talking to people. You know, we're sitting down, we're having extensive conversations with state historic preservation officials. We have face-to-face meetings with the variety of tribes that we work with. We now work with 18 different tribes that are spread over a very large area. And you know, we'll host face-to-face conversations. We talk about what our plans are for the future and ask for their input. You know, hey, we need to do this. What are things that we could do to mitigate any potential damage from these types of activities? And so, again, by talking to people, by rebuilding trust, rediscovering the lost art of the good conversation, I think we're making good things happen here.
Okay, Jim, very quickly, what do you think will be the biggest challenge in doing all this?
Rebuilding the trust, obviously.
Okay.
But, you know, at the same time, we're making some great progress.
Jim Nepstad is superintendent of Effigy Mounds National Monument. Thank you for updating us on this news story, Jim.
You bet.
And tomorrow on this program, we'll talk about the value of the bar exam. Should law school graduates in Iowa have to take the bar exam to practice law in the state? We'll find out different opinions on that when we talk again tomorrow over the noon hour. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins in Des Moines. Help from John Pemble. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.